Peter and Reg, welcome, also known as Dog Trumpet, welcome to the Last Post podcast series. It's a great pleasure having you here and an honour. And something that came about quite serendipitously, but something I've been wanting to do for many times. How are you both going? How are you both travelling? And how are Dog Trumpet going?
Oh, pretty good, thanks. Yeah, well, we've been pretty busy. We've done the first sort of interstate touring in the last month and a half that we've done for years because of the, you know, all the pandemic lockdowns and all the travel sort of, you know, problems. So it's good to get out of New South Wales again. So, you know, we're enjoying playing and we're getting good crowds. So we're happy with that.
Yeah, indeed. I think for both of you, obviously, being born in New Zealand and coming across to Australia at a relatively young age, as brothers, were you traditionally close as brothers? Did you feed off each other? When was it that you first recognised that there was some mutual wanting to express yourself through art or music or whatever?
Well, we were both keen drawers as children, and I started playing music, playing the guitar when I was about 15, although I had a few piano lessons when I was 12, and I think Peter started playing the guitar when he was 11 or 12, and so, you know, we've been at it for a while.
We have a difference in age, so, you know, I was about 6 years younger than Reg, so, you know, I saw him as a teenager and I was younger than that, you know, playing guitar, so that was quite, you know, quite impressive to me and quite influential. And plus, you know, we were both listening to the radio in the 60s and early 70s, and you know, it was an amazing time for music. So there's a lot of different kinds of music that were filtering through, and the top 40 was full of great stuff. And you know, and Reg was collecting old blues records, and you know, and loved all the English stuff, and I did too. So you know, it just, once you sort of get the bug and start playing guitar, it's you know, we both just kept at it, and the switch goes on and never was turned off.
Isn't it amazing, Peter? And you speak about that inspiration through the radio, which a lot of us around the age felt, and of course the variety too. You'd have Dean Martin one moment, the Beatles, and whatever, it just seemed Frank Sinatra and then Led Zeppelin. It was an amazing time of variation.
It really was.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, the hit parade today is pretty bit generic. It's all the same sort of stuff, essentially.
It's probably more compartmentalised nowadays, but back then it was all in one top 40, as you say. You know, so you'd have country, you'd have sort of a jazz novelty song, and then you'd have a Cream or a Hendrix song next to a Bacharach song. And so it was really interesting, eclectic, you know, mix of songs. And plus, you know, there's reggae coming through at the time too. So great influence for, you know, for kids like us, you know, to draw from.
Yes, it was hard not to fall in love with the radio back then. So you came to Australia, went to uni. When you joined, or when you formed the Mentals, did you find that the people that are attracted to join you in that group, could you believe that you gave across a zaniness, but a great, I remember seeing your first single one Saturday morning, the zaniness of the Mentals, was that perfectly befitting how you wanted to express yourself at that time?
Oh, well, I mean, no, we didn't really think about it much. It was just, you know, we were an art school band, and I suppose there was some sort of, you know, some of that sort of weird art sort of bohemian, you know, ridiculous stuff got, you know, came into the band, I guess, because of that.
We kind of all, we did share a sense of, I suppose, the absurd, and you know, that sort of sense of humour that comes through, and we sort of looked at the way, you know, like music was and the way pop stars looked, and we kind of thought it was pretty ridiculous in so many ways, and yet we were doing it too. So, you know, we were kind of poking fun at ourselves as we were doing it, but quite seriously songwriting at the same time.
Yeah, that's right. I think a lot of people recognise that. I remember telling this girl that I met in Toronto back in the 80s that there was a group in Australia called Mental as Anything, and she fell in love with the name, and obviously then she became a fan because of the name. It attracts that making fun of yourself in many ways, which is true. So I guess the idea of Dog Trumpet for both of you, I was just speaking to Reg before, Peter, about obviously formed in the early 90s, and when you took a break from Mentals, and Reg suggests it's because you both had a lot of songs to get out there that obviously would be hard under the Mentals banner.
Yeah, well, with the Mentals, we had four principal songwriters, so there was a lot of songs being written and only so much space on each Mentals album.
Mm.
And as we gathered pace through the 80s, what had begun as a sort of like a maximum momentum in the earlier days, we were putting out basically a record every year. Just got slowed down a little bit with the touring and the record companies and the cumbersome sort of sense of there was more expectation, more money floating around, bigger budgets. And it kind of slowed us all up. And by the time we did get to the end of the 80s, we probably had a handful of songs that were quite good songs, and they hadn't made it to any album for the Mentals. So we realized that we had enough to think about making our own album. And we had a bit of a hiatus from the Mentals. Greedy, you know, had an accident and we were off the road for a little while. So that was the opportunity to make a record. So we made that first one with no real, you know, idea, a bit like the Mentals, no idea what the future held. And here we are 8 albums later, you know.
Yeah, and bless
or
that.
8 albums in.
Yeah, and bless that for what you went through. The Two Heads, One Brain album, I guess, a summation of what you were doing together. I mean, some of the songs you recognise, some of the songs of Dog Trumpet you recognise as, Mentals, and of course others are completely Dog Trumpet stuff. Where did the name come from, the name Dog Trumpet?
Oh, it was just it was an image that I had that I'd done for Mambo at the time as a cross between a dog and a jet engine and a trumpet, and we just thought, that'll do for a name. We've got a picture to go with it, so we didn't sort of put that much thought into it really.
Mm. And I know that one of the things that's true to nature for both of you is we spoke about the zaniness that seemed to encapsulate the feeling of Mentals. Now a more mature zaniness, perhaps. But is it true that, I guess, that the third album, did you record that on a reel-to-reel in a flat in Coogee? Or?
Yes. Yeah, no. We made the first one in a recording studio, in the same sort of method as we would have done Mentals albums, with a producer, Steve James, who had also worked with the Mentals. Mm. So it was kind of like we just sort of, you know, we just kept going the way we sort of always knew. And then we've kind of like in a way become in a world of very low budgets after that, because we so it was at the same time technology was getting better and better, so you could start making, you know, you could make records at home. And I had like an 8-track reel-to-reel tape recorder, which I recorded a fair bit of stuff on, and then up that to a 16-track tape recorder. And we made a couple of albums and that way at home on, you know, so very, very basic sort of stuff, very old school analog gear. And then eventually I had to go over to the Pro Tools and a computer and start working that way, just because the my gear was wearing out. The old tape recorder wasn't working so well anymore. So we made the last few albums, you know, all digitally, but at the same time making it sound with real gear, good mics, and we're playing very much old school kind of music. So it's not like we're doing something in a modern way in the sense of, say, electronica or hip hop. You know, I do use some, you know, drum writing tools and things that I can. Which is a big sort of songwriting aid, and I've used that on the last album exclusively. There's no real drummer on the last and this present album, but you I spent a lot of time on that and make it sound as real as possible, and I don't think anybody would know that wasn't, you know, a real drummer playing. But the technology is great, so you can make records at home, and that's what a lot of people do now.
Yeah, well, it comes across beautifully. Love the music, and of course. To me, it's funny with the ballad of Clayton Luby, because I've got a few. We've all got surfer mates and everything, but you encapsulate a bit of the grunge surfing feel very much so. And is this part of the psych? It just appears to be something that comes to mind when we listen to Dog Trumpet now. Very surfing type music for some reason. It fits in that genre.
Oh, well- That's, I mean, that song is about, you know, my, I came from New Zealand and lived on the northern beaches of Sydney, went to school up there. So all my friends were surfers. So, and Clayton Luby was one of them. You know, he's a particularly extreme sort of version of a rat bag who had a very pirate kind of life. And, you know, he passed away a couple of years ago.
Yeah.
Kind of, you know, just from wear and tear. But, yeah, no, he had a pretty colourful life. But, that surfing thing, yeah, I think we've had that through the Mentals as well. There's big, in fact, the B side of Nips Are Getting Bigger was instrumental as anything, which was pretty much, you know, a surfing instrumental based on all those, you know, those sort of surf bands of the 60s that we liked, that, you know, from the sort of the, you know, the Deltones through to, you know, to Blink Ray and whatever, you know.
Yeah, we used to play. We used to play Wipeout, and we also played Stomping at Maroubra, the Little Paddy song.
Right.
Early gigs.
Yeah, that's interesting. That too, because instrumental as anything, that should have been a double A side. That first single, it was lovely. It was great stuff.
Yeah. No, it was a good song.
Yeah.
Good tune.
Yeah. I was talking to Reg before about how the streaming has impacted on the earning potential of artists. And we know the good and bad of all of that. But so touring for you guys obviously is a productive way of not only getting your music out to the Australian public, but also of earning a few bucks along the way. How have you found the current tour, Peter?
Oh, look, it's been going good, Greg. We've been up in Queensland, Tasmania, Victoria. So we've gotten out of New South Wales for the first time in several years. You know, we had the album before this one, Great South Road, we had it all ready to go. We had booked in gigs and, you know, interstate gigs, and then the COVID thing hit and everything shut down. So we didn't really go out and play, you know, apart from a couple of shows around Sydney, we didn't play any shows for that album outside of a very, you know, tiny little radius. But so we're just getting out again, and it's been great. The people have been coming to see us and getting a really good response to the record. And so, you know, that's what we're pretty pleased about that.
Yeah, that's right. I've heard some very good reports. And I think with the unshackling of the COVID era, and perhaps also with the government more likely to be attuned to the arts, do you find there's a reawakening of some sorts, a new energy that's coming about now?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, I think that there does seem to be a bit more enthusiasm. All the festivals are up and running again, you know, which is they were all struggling and closing down or cancelling and, you know, putting things off.
Yeah.
So that you can see that, and people seem to be keen to be go out again after all those 2 or 3 years of semi, you know, staying at home.
It's taken a while for it to get sort of, you know, reboot itself, because a lot of venues were still struggling with bands cancelling and people getting COVID and bands, and, you know, so like it didn't take much to keep it sort of a little bit on edge. So I think it's getting a lot more secure now. Everybody's going back to pretty much the normal, and people love to go out. So, you know, you can see why they've been trapped in their houses for 2 years.
Yeah, that's right. There is
some little small difficulties with the festivals, because everything, all the costs have gone up quite remarkably, you know, so unless they can sell enough tickets, that, you know, they have the problem of not covering their costs. So that will hopefully be a problem that gets ironed out.
Yeah, that's right. How long's the current tour you guys doing? How long is that going for? I know I've seen the dates, but just if you let people know, how long is it going for? And what have you got planned after that?
Our next gigs are we're going to Canberra this week, and somewhere near Cowra, and then we're doing the Byron Bay Blues Festival. And apart from a couple of gigs in Sydney, there's not a lot locked in after that.
Playing in Wollongong, and a few other things. But yeah, well, then we're looking at the further down the track this year to do and, you know, more gigs. But we've been busy for the last couple of months.
Yeah, just on a sideline there, I was just thinking, the song Marianne, did you guys write that?
Peter wrote
that.
Yeah,
I wrote that one. Yeah,
Peter, just a brilliant song. It just came to me when I was talking about one of your other songs, Marianne. Yeah, I just had to get that out there to make sure that I got that right, because it's a brilliant song. So With your art, and we spoke about this, I guess, growing up, with the ability to express yourself through music and also through the visual arts, how important is that for you, for not only mental health, but also a feeling of progression in life, that you're doing something different? No one likes to keep treading water.
Well, it's one of those things where you talk about mental health. It's we're lucky that we were able to, you know, forge a life where we do, you know, art, our music and our visual art, because it's the sort of thing that you do as a child, you know, for you know, absolute, it's a very natural thing to do when you're a little kid, and that kind of gets beaten out of you as you go through life, you know, through school, and, you know, people go to university, and then you have to enter the work world, and so we both avoided the normal world of you know, having to find a job with a salary, or, you know, so
I would have been very frustrated and disappointed if I hadn't got to, do art and music as an adult, which I wanted to do from an early age. So to not be able to do that would have been quite disappointing.
Brilliant. And I know that the world is a better place because of your commitment to that. And we know that. We know that your success, not only in Australia and New Zealand, but worldwide. And it's a good advertisement for the fact that anyone out there that feels the need to express themselves through art should be encouraged to do so, and not necessarily find themselves locked into that that feeling that they have to do something more traditionally conservative. It brings about, I guess, for you guys, surprises and joy and happiness each day. Almost each day.
It does.
it's very, there are tedious aspects of it, and, you know, disappointments when things don't go well, or you do a bad picture, or you can't finish a song off or something. But generally, you know, we both feel very grateful that we can go on doing it every day, and people.
The arts are a funny one, because they do. A lot of people actually, you know, are tortured by doing it, because it presents the same sort of set of challenges, you know, what every time you write a song, you know, if you think it was a successful song, and you've done, you know, you've sort of put all the pieces together to make that song work, it doesn't mean you're going to do another one, you know, in the same way, and it's not going to come easily. I mean, some songs for both of us have been written over several years before they sort of actually come to light, and other songs you can maybe write in a day or two. So it's a very erratic kind of, you know, kind of thing to trying to just, you know, just get there, you know, with a song. Yeah. And same with art, you know, I find too.
Yeah, just to briefly on the songwriting thing, I remember John Lennon telling George Harrison that the song was best to write quickly, and yet he was no great artist at that. He would procrastinate over songs for many years himself too. With the paintings, how long do these take generally, or is it like the songs, each one has its different journey?
Well, it kind of depends. I mean, I do anything from a drawing, which might take 5 minutes, up till, you know, a painting or a drawing that you would work on for weeks. So it depends. Yeah. You know, it depends on how detailed and how finally finished it is, and what materials you're using in terms of that.
And the scale of it too, the scales, you know.
Right. And finally, I guess for both of you, Shadowland is amazing. You're happy with the album. There's some great songs on it. How did it feel recording? Did you know you were recording a great album when you were doing it?
No, you never know what you're doing when you're recording it. You're just in the midst of it, you know. Basically, we wrote the songs over quite a concentrated time after the previous album I was talking about released at the beginning of COVID in 2020. Because of the lockdowns, we had time where we weren't on the road. We weren't doing a lot of other things. There were no other real social commitments. So we had a lot more time to focus on the songwriting and the recording. So we did this album in record time for us. It took probably, you know, 18 months all up to do it. And whereas some of the previous albums have taken 5 years, you know, 6 years even, you know, to nail them down. So So we thought we had some good songs, you know, and we just kept going. And each album is a bit like that. You just start with what you've got, and as you go, you get a bit of momentum up, and you get enthusiastic about the songwriting, and you write a few more, you know, and they sort of just appear.
Yes,
but you got to open up the channel to get them out. You know, you've got to dig them out somehow.
That's right. Well, I think like similar to the Mentals, and it's only natural it would be this way, but you keep there is this feeling of expectation and interest alone in the fact that you're producing something new, because as there is a theme and a feeling that runs through all Dog Trumpet albums, there's also the fact that each song, each album is different. And we'll remember that very much so with this album too. It's completely brilliant. Thanks so much for being part of this.
Well, thanks for having us.
Yeah, thanks for having us on, Greg.
Nah, it's great. Look forward to catching up, and hopefully we'll get to do something about seeing some of your paintings and next exhibition for both of you. That'd be lovely.
Yep, no worries.
Come and see us if we're down your way.
Oh, yeah, most definitely. Look forward to having a chat and catching up. Take care, my good friends, and stay safe.
Okay, no worries, Ross.
Bye-bye.
See you.
Bye. Okay.